Local Talk is the signature local interview program on KHOI that explores people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. It celebrates the creativity, diversity, and civic spirit of our community. This interview aired on Local Talk.
Coming up on September 3rd, a contingent of Iowans who are marching 95 miles through the Central Iowa will camp out in Ames. The First Nation Farmer Climate Unity March is going to begin in front of the Iowa Utilities Board offices in Des Moines and going to end up in Fort Dodge on September 8th, which is the day of the nationwide Rise for Climate Day of Action. Now, according to the organizers of Rise for Climate, on September 8th, they're planning thousands of rallies in cities and towns around the world to demand from local leaders their commitments to building a fossil-free world that puts people and justice before profits.
The Iowa marchers are also specifically seeking to raise awareness of an upcoming occurrence that is local and actually very historic for Iowa. On September 12th, the Iowa Supreme Court will begin to hear arguments claiming that the pipeline laid across Iowa by Dakota Access, otherwise known as the Bakken Pipeline, violated Iowa's eminent domain laws. This has been several years in the making, and the plaintiffs are the Sierra Club, along with numerous Iowa landowners who claim that their property rights have been violated. To help gain a better understanding of exactly what's happening, Keith Putney is on the phone with us from Boone. He's one of the landowners who are suing. Keith owns 600 acres of farmland, which has been passed down to him through the family in Boone and Webster counties. And he is also an attorney as well as managing farmland. Keith, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Keith, you are speaking to us from Boone, right? That's where you live?
I am, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm born in the area and raised in Boone most of my life.
You manage the farms that you own?
Right. My dad was a physician back in the 60s. He bought a couple of farms. He died in 71, and I was a freshman in law school. And as soon as I got out of law school, the management of the family farms was handed to me. So since 1974, I've been a farm manager and looking after the farms and hoping to pass the farms down to the next generation.
What kind of work did you do as an attorney?
I worked for the Internal Revenue Service as an estate and gift tax attorney. Traveled about two-thirds of the state, the western two-thirds of the state of Iowa. So I'm pretty familiar with farming, and not only from a personal side, but also from a business side as a result of those activities.
And I recall you had some sort of background in environmentalism, right?
Well, if you're a farmer, you're an environmentalist, whether you admit it or not. You know, every year in the spring you plant, and every year in the fall you harvest, and in between you get everything ready to produce crops. I took it one step further by going to an Al Gore training session, so I guess that makes me a double environmentalist, a tree hugger, if you will.
Okay.
But it adds to what I call the circle of knowledge, which is part of my circle of life as I continue to do what I love to do.
Right. Well, if you manage 600 acres of farmland, you're doing more than hugging trees. So.
Yes.
How much land and how many landowners are we talking about that are involved with the Dakota Access Pipeline? How many people did this actually affect?
Well, the actual number of landowners affected, according to the filing by Dakota Access, was about 910 farm families. Now, you know, families can be anywhere from one to, you know, a large number of people. And there actually were 1,257 parcels of land that the pipeline crosses in some fashion. And I kind of did a back of the envelope thing to give your listeners a little bit better idea. The actual right-of-way, both the eminent domain right-of-way and the so-called working right-of-way, you know, to put the pipe in the ground, was 6,000 acres. About 84% of that is farmland. 2,000 acres are permanent right-of-way. The other 4,000 are, you know, the working right-of-way to put the pipe and the valves and everything else in mm-hmm. the ground. But if you look at this in an aggregate sense of what this affects, that 1,257 parcels, if they were an average of 80 acres in size, really affects over 100,000 acres in Iowa. And at 10,000 an acre, which is roughly the current value of good farmland, you're talking about $1 billion of farming land that's been affected by the pipeline, about 60 million of which, of course, is the right-of-way and the working right-of-way at 6,000 acres and 10,000 an acre.
Now, just to be clear, this pipeline is functioning. there is oil going through it. About how much oil are we talking about going through the pipeline?
Well, they've been ramping it up. They started out low, quote, low for them. They started out about 400,000 barrels, and you have to remember there's 42 gallons in a barrel. So that's 1.6 million in terms of gallons. They're now above 500,000 barrels. It was permitted at somewhere between 520 and 570,000 barrels. So at 570,000 barrels, you would be in the neighborhood of 23 million gallons or about 1 million gallons an hour going through the pipe.
Mm-hmm. So that's where we are right now with the pipeline. Keith, would you describe your own land?
My land is pretty much what Iowa considers flat black dirt, although I've got, you know, some roll to it. It's all pretty much farmable. I've got 540 some acres out of my 600 acres that's actually farmable. The rest of it, I have one farm over by the Des Moines River near Pilot Mound, and that has some deep ravine timber, you know, to it as well. But for the most part, it's the big high CSR flat black, you know, dirt that's some of the better land in not only Iowa but anywhere in the world.
The black soil that I always miss when I leave Iowa. Keith, tell us, now you're one of the people who had the pipeline go across that land. Tell us what happened. How did the easements happen with you and with other people around the state? How did this all play out?
Well, the permit started in 2014 when Kelsey Warren, who owns Energy Transfer Equity at ETE, which also owns two other companies, ETP, which is the parent of the Dakota Access Pipeline, and Sunoco, which is the actual manager of the pipeline, came into Iowa and started talking to the you know, the legislators and those in power at the State House in trying to get this thing arranged. And then at the end of 2014, the Dakota Access folks actually held a public hearing in each of the 18 counties to notify the people that there was, in fact, a pipeline being looked at and a route had been looked at. And from that, things went downhill for those of us who have farmland, because at that point, beginning in basically the spring of 2015, or actually the winter of 2015, starting in January, February, March, the land agents started dropping on all of the people along the way, trying to get them to sign voluntary easements. And the easements were supposedly to entice people into the voluntarily signing away their property rights. And at that time, the discussions were fairly friendly, okay, except the land agents would always say, well, this is a big oil company, and we just want you to know they're either going to take your land now or take your land later by eminent domain, which a little consternation.
Yeah, so,
you know,
that's where the rub started, right, in terms of your lawsuit?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's where those of us who were landowners started to get really concerned. And at that time, there was a three-quarter-mile route that they were looking at, so we thought, we'll just tell them, I'm not interested, go somewhere else. And that obviously didn't work. So they pretty much had a route in mind, and they just kept coming back and coming back, and sometimes they would call multiple times a day, and I had as many as seven different land agents visit me over the course of basically months that went on into a year, and they all had the same story of the Fram commercial. We're going to get you now, or we're going to get you later, and if we get you now, we'll sweeten the deal with cash, and if we get you later, then guess what? We'll get you. So that's kind of what happened. Basically, a voluntary, but not really voluntary.
Right.
It was coerced.
So I'm assuming that you actually never did voluntarily give up your land. So when did the rubber hit the road, so to speak? When did the voluntary part stop?
Well, the voluntary part stopped basically in December of 15, when the Iowa Utility Board actually held what's called a contested hearing to see whether or not Chapter 479B, which is the hazardous liquid pipeline chapter under the IUB's control, should in fact grant a permit. And that was a contested hearing here in Boone that lasted weeks. A lot of people on the farmer side came. A lot of folks went out and hired, you know, some pretty high power attorneys, and the Sierra Club at that time joined us in this, arguing that 479B had a section called convenience and necessity, and where was the convenience or the necessity for this pipeline, since Iowa was already well served. And the second thing is, there's no on-ramp or off-ramp for this oil. We have no refineries in anywhere, you know, in the state of Iowa, or the closest one is Illinois, and most of this oil from the Bakken was going to Patuca, Illinois, and then down to Nederland, Texas, which meant that most of it was going to be sent overseas. The unique thing about the Bakken oil is it's called shale oil, or light crude, and 39 gallons of the 42 gallons can be easily converted into gasoline. So it's a highly refinable product that's very valuable for gasoline fuel and that sort of thing, as compared to the heavier oils like the tar sands oil or the Brent oils, you know, from Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, the Gulf of Mexico, and other things, which are not as easily converted. But the interesting side about the Bakken oil is that the Bakken oil is unrefined coming out of the ground, which means that it contains NGLs, which are natural gas liquids called, you know, the methanes, the ethanes, the butanes, which are highly carcinogenic if they ever get on your land or in your water. And that unrefined oil is very explosive if there's a spark or some kind of an issue. So this oil was different than anything else that most of the areas were having to deal with pipelines, and that was one of our big objections. As you know, Iowa doesn't really draw its water sources from wells. We are all pretty much surface-run water. There are 11 major rivers and 74 major watersheds that this pipeline crosses in the 17-county area. We have the three large Corps of Engineer dam projects, Saylorville, Red Rock, and Rathbun, that all of these rivers feed into. And, you know, that six-county Des Moines metroplex of 600,000-plus is 20% of the population in the state of Iowa, and we felt all of this would endanger those kinds of issues in addition to any spill, you know, just totally destroying farmland once it happened. And the route which they chose brought them through what's called the Prairie Pothole area. That's the Wisconsin glacier that came down, and it's been highly drained and tiled. It was a swamp back in a long time ago. And we were concerned that any underground leakage would get into our tile systems and run for miles, and it would be very difficult to stop and find, and it would be catastrophic. So we were concerned.
Your resistance to having the pipeline put down was not just wanting it across your land, but it was really concern about the general ecosystem and environment of the whole state, is what I'm hearing.
Right.
Water
right.
in the state. Uh-huh. So,
right. Go ahead.
So tell us about PPRC. What happened?
Well, PPRC is an organization, the Private Property Rights Coalition, that I and another attorney up in Storm Lake, John Murray, founded. It's a not-for-profit, and its only purpose was to raise funds to fight the lawsuit. And we sent out letters to all 910 farm families and got a large number of them, even if they were had signed a voluntary easement, to sign up because they didn't like what was going on. And so we raised tens of thousands of dollars that way.
To fight the pipeline, right?
To fight the pipeline, uh-huh. Right. Mm-hmm. And we hired the Davis-Brown firm in Des Moines to take on that fight for us. And like I said, then the Sierra Club came in and on their side of it and joined in the fight. And so the fight has been ongoing through district courts and in many counties through the Des Moines District Court, and we're now finally where we need to be at the Iowa Supreme Court to try and get a fair hearing.
Okay, now, as I understand it, there are three separate arguments being made. Can you just briefly summarize what the three separate arguments that are being made against the pipeline?
Sure. In 2005, the U.S. Supreme Court had a case called the Kelo case, which for the first time said that private or profit entities could come in and use eminent domain. And that one was particularly interesting because the developer in that particular time wanted to come into New York and take a blighted area and turn it into housing and shops and reduce crime and raise taxes and everything, all of which seemed to have some kind of a positive, you know, benefit to New York as a result of that. The one interesting thing about that case was there was quite a strong dissent that, well, once you open the door to eminent domain by for-profit companies, you're on a slippery slope. They said that, of course, states could enact a law to, you know, curtail that if they wanted. And so in 2006, the Iowa legislature enacted Code Section 6A21, and that code section was designed to protect farmland. And it said, no, farmland can only be taken voluntarily, okay, in terms of that. But there was a caveat that said, well, if there is a public purpose and that public purpose is under the control of the Iowa Utility Board, then there's perhaps an exception to that. And, of course, that was designed for the folks that provide our water or, you know, our sewer, our electricity, our gas, and everything else, which are actually public utilities and, in fact, controlled here in the state of Iowa as a result of that. Now, we're talking public utilities, not private utilities. Those folks were, in fact, still able to use eminent domain. And so Dakota Access came in and said, well, you guys have a section of the code, which is 479B, which deals with hazardous liquid pipelines. And we have to go through a procedure at the Iowa Utility Board to get permission for this pipeline. Well, of course you do, because you're coming through a landmass in the state of Iowa. And the only thing the Iowa Utility Board had control over was route. And so the Dakota Access folks said, well, since we're under the control of the Iowa Utility Board and they have the determination of where the route is, we should be, you know, given eminent domain. The problem is 479B basically says there has to be something called public convenience and necessity. And Dakota Access basically ignored that because, again, there's no on-ramp or off-ramp, and we are fully served. And they said, well, public convenience and necessity is not just about what's in the state of Iowa. It's about the United States in general under the U.S. Commerce Clause. So they argued that this pipeline was safer, was providing security to the United States with the ability to transport this oil all over the nation in case of natural disaster or other needs, and also was providing $1 billion in temporary jobs and employment, and also going to provide property tax. And the Iowa Utility Board bought the argument. We don't agree with that.
That's the eminent domain argument that is being made. This case now is going to the Supreme Court, and we're talking with Keith Putney, who's a Iowa farmland owner in Boone, part of the court case together with the Sierra Club that is fighting the pipeline. And as he just explained, based on the use of the eminent domain laws, what do you see are the consequences of the case? If you win the case, does it stop the pipeline?
It may, at least temporarily. If they have used eminent domain incorrectly, then that would throw out all of the parcels that were, you know, taken by eminent domain as something that they were allowed to do, and in which case you now have an issue of what's called trespass. That means the pipeline going through the property is a trespass. But also Texas law says that every gallon or barrel of oil that went through the pipeline is a trespass. And the big issue is then those of us who are against this and we're had our land taken by eminent domain, can we have the pipeline removed from our property? That's one of the things we will ask for. And then the other issue is damages for the trespass. And those include trying to remediate the property and put it back into some kind of agricultural production, as well as what happened, you know, from passing all the oil and putting the pipe in the ground.
And does the pipeline damage the ground?
Yes, it does. There's severe compaction. We've now are in the process of determining the damages, and our PhD soil scientist says that this ground is not economically productive now. The compaction is so great because the pipeline is anywhere from 10 to 30 feet deep that it may never in our lifetime, our children's lifetime, or our grandchildren's lifetimes ever return to substantial productivity because they brought the clays, which were at the bottom of the soil profile up on top, and they've sealed off the ground. So not only will it not be productive, but the water won't go down through it. And we now have a super waterway from Lyon to Lee County, which is a 350-mile route. Lots of issues here that are yet to be determined and looked at.
And,
the good news,
Keith,
is the... Go ahead.
Tell us some good news.
the good news is the Iowa Court of Appeals has recently looked at another pipeline case where the tenant claimed that he had continuous and would have continuous crop damage as a result of that pipeline going in, and they agreed with the fact that he now should be reimbursed for crop loss for as long as there is crop loss. So that's good news for the farm tenants, but of course that means every individual has to fight every big company that has a pipe in the ground in Iowa for just compensation for that sort of thing.
So one final question. If whatever the outcome of this court case at this Iowa Supreme Court, is there a potential for this to go to the U.S. Supreme Court?
No. Mm-hmm. Again, the only issue that is here is an Iowa code issue, because the only thing the Iowa Utility Board had was route, and route is a local issue that deals with landmass.
Okay. Keith, thank you so much for speaking with us. And we will stay tuned to what happens this coming September. We've been speaking with Keith Putney, who is an Iowa landowner and farm manager from Boone, and he's founder of the nonprofit organization Iowa Private Property Rights Coalition, one of the various groups that are currently fighting the Dakota Access Pipeline, which now will be brought before the Iowa Supreme Court on September 12th. Thank you so much, Keith. Really appreciate it.
And thank you for the time. And please have your listeners come out to one of the meetings that Ed Fallon and the nations are doing, because we'll have landowners at those meetings being able to tell their story as well.
Yeah, and they'll be in Ames on the 3rd of September. First
and
Nation.
And Boone the following night.
And Boone the following night. The First Nation right. Farmer Climate Unity March. Thank you, Keith. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You can hear more interviews like this on Local Talk, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on 89.1 KHOI Community Radio. You can support Community Radio through the Donate button at khoifm.org.